Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For today's podcast, my conversation with New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. He comes on my New York show every week. Today, though, relevant to everyone, we talk mostly about whether to close the public schools. Many systems are shutting down temporarily because of COVID-19, but some, like in New York City, are not, a position the mayor passionately defends. Our conversation suggests trade-offs that many school systems are now grappling with. It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, March 13th. As our world continues to change in this way that was unimaginable just a few weeks ago, even just a few days ago, I mean, the world changed a lot yesterday afternoon with all the different closures and other announcements. So we're all living to various degrees in a state of shock this morning, and I just wanted to acknowledge that. Because I guess it's probably best to just say that out loud to each other to help us face whatever each of us is facing with this and to help us get through this together as a city, as a country, as a world. I hope everybody listening right now has a good private support system. We will keep trying to be part of your public support system and do our best to provide information and community. But not everything is different, and we begin, as usual on Fridays, with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment, My Questions and Yours, for Mayor Bill de Blasio. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian. And Brian, I want to thank you for what you just said. I think it's really, really important that we acknowledge the shock we're all in. It literally seems to change hourly a lot of the time, and we have not been through anything like this. And people are fearful, they're anxious, they're confused, they have every right to be. And I think it's really important that people have places like your show to turn to for accurate information and, you know, a real dialogue.
And before we get into policy questions around coronavirus, let me ask how you are. I don't envy you having to be faced with the incredibly difficult choices that you're having to make right now. How are you holding up?
Brian, thank you for asking. I'm really focused on listening to what New Yorkers are going through, but also making the right decisions for them, never letting the fear or the panic in. And I want to say something very personal. I think it's true in my case. And I don't mean to overstate this, Brian, but it's just a human reality. I had the blessing, and so did my wife, Shirlane. We happened to be brought up by parents who participated. Every single one of our parents participated in World War II. And we were told those stories throughout our upbringing. And I think when your entire worldview is shaped by people who went through something absolutely cataclysmic, that the entire society participated in, that everyone closed ranks and supported each other.
And the depression that led into that for all those years.
I do think there are some basic rules that come from, you know, really listening to those who, you know, walked through hell and came back. Which is, you know, the number one thing is never let the panic in. Never let anyone convince you to panic. There are so many things that should reassure us despite the fear, despite the real, honest fear, the unknown. The unknown is the biggest fear here, Brian. We're dealing with a disease that no one ever heard of because it didn't exist to medical science less than 6 months ago, and they still don't understand, and that's a very valid reason for fear. But there's a whole lot of facts, a whole lot of truth and experience that should be reassuring to us, and we're going to get through this, and we're going to come out the other side, and we're going to move forward.
Let me deal with the most frequent question that we're getting, and that's about closing schools. Six
Yep.
states have done it. We're getting some calls for it, and the chancellor and you have some reasons against it. What's your thinking as of right now?
Oh, not just some reasons, profound reasons. I really believe this. It begins with our children. We need our children to be safe. We need them to be in a place where, you know, there's now school nurse in every single school building. We need our children to be fed, which is a reality, bluntly, in a city with lots of folks who have very few resources, a lot of folks who are poor, that our schools are a place where kids often get two nutritious meals in their day that they might not get otherwise. We need our first responders, our medical personnel, to be able to depend on our schools for their children, for their own children, so they can do the work to protect all of us, so they're not forced to have to stay home because they have no other choice. And we also, by the way, you know, when states or anyplace else close their schools, is that for a week, a month? Is that the entire rest of the school year? Do you realize the impact that has on a child's education to lose half a school year or a big chunk of a school year?
The other side of that is it's just a few months.
Well, but I would say in the life of a child and their intellectual development and everything else, it's a big deal. Now, the question is, you know, what's safe? What's the right thing to do? And right now, we have seen that this disease has a very consistent pattern around the world. This disease, its biggest impact in terms of truly negative consequences is on older people, folks 50 and over, folks who have pre-existing serious medical conditions. The children who have experienced this disease in this city who did not have a serious pre-existing right. medical conditions came through very, very well, very quickly.
But
so this is, Brian, just to finish it, you know, we have a very strong philosophy, and I've been talking constantly with the governor and the heads of the different agencies, that the line of defense we are holding here is to keep our health care system running, including the people we need to staff it, to keep our mass transit running, which is crucial for everything, for making sure healthcare workers can get to work, first responders, so that people still can work. We need people to keep working for their livelihood and our schools. A lot of other things we could do without, but those three things are absolutely crucial to preserve.
But before we go to the phones, on what you just said, what's safe, it's not just for the school children, it's also for the grown-ups who take care of the school children. And I want to play a clip of, probably you agree, the most respected national leader on this right now, Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. This is a 60-second clip of him after he was asked on Morning Joe today on MSNBC to lay out how he would balance when and where to close schools.
I think you need to do it proportionately. If you have a considerable amount or even the beginnings of community spread in your community, clearly you need to do very aggressive mitigation procedures. If you have less, you can start doing something. I mean, physical separation, a lot of crowds, don't do unnecessary travel, the kinds of things like telework, that's all fine. When it comes to the really, really forceful mitigation, should be a little bit more proportionate. But with regard to what you're saying, what the effect is, even though we know, because we have experience now with other countries, that children, although they get infected, they really, unlike influenza, they do not necessarily at all get serious disease. In fact, if you look at the history of what we've seen, children do very well. The only problem is when they get infected, and schools can be a breeding ground for that, they go home and infect grandma, grandpa, or a relative or someone who might be in a more vulnerable position. So that's the rationale for shutting schools.
So, Mr. Mayor, I'm not advocating one thing or another, but Dr. Fauci seemed to say, without naming New York or any other city, that because we have community spread of the virus, and, you know, there's a need to protect the older parents and grandparents, which would imply separate the kids from each other. What would you say to that clip?
I would say, first of all, we should not have an illusion that if you close schools, kids are not going to still be connecting with other kids and family members and, you know, be out and around. I mean, the notion that we're going to isolate every child from the rest of their family, I think is very suspect. I think, in fact, it puts tremendous strain on families.
Well, not from the rest of their family, from other families' children.
Right, but
more,
this
right?
Is where I'm, listen to where I'm going. It's going to put tremendous strain on families. If they can't have their kids in school, everything else is going to change in their lives. And do you really think kids are going to stay in their room or stay in their apartment for weeks and weeks or months on end and not come in contact with other kids and other people? It's unrealistic. So I think the reality we have is we need the adults to, who anyone who is an adult in our school system needs to practice the kind of common sense measures we've talked about. If they're truly themselves, if they are sick, not out of fear, but out of fact, if they are sick, they should stay home until they're well. That is very, very important. If a parent, any child sees that their child is sick in any way, hold your child home, because most of the sicknesses that are traditional this time of year take a few days to clarify either something more serious or something that kids will get over or anybody would get over after a few days, typical cold, et cetera. If it's something more serious, we'll get them tested. But the fact is, to say we are going to shut down everything and thus, in the process, create a huge amount of negative impact unto itself, let alone undermine all the people who we depend on to help keep this society running and protect everyone, who then have to deal with their own children. There's a very slippery slope here, and I've been blunt about it, Brian. So I heard exactly what Dr. Fauci said, and I'm heartened, especially by the point he made clearly, that this disease has had minimal impact on kids, particularly healthy kids. But we have to balance each of the pieces right now in a very big, complex equation. And I don't think it's as simple as saying, if you do something like close schools, it doesn't have a huge domino effect that then hurts a lot of other pieces of what we need to do.
I see that City Council Councilman Mark Traeger sent an idea to the Education Department, which is closing most public schools and using the rest to serve at-risk students and families, like those you were describing who need food aid or child care, or whose parents are health care workers, and kids with certain disabilities. Those were all on the councilman's list. Have you seen that one yet?
I haven't, and I appreciate, you know, every constructive suggestion, and he's someone I respect a lot. But again, that's one piece of the equation. There are many, many other pieces. I just actually reviewed a number of them with you. The nutrition is one piece of it. But we're going to watch this every day. And one of the things I said in detail at the press conference yesterday, Brian, is, and it fits with how you opened, this situation is changing not daily but hourly. If conditions change, we'll make decisions accordingly. But I believe that everything I laid out to you, the extraordinary negative impact of taking down schools, all the multiplier effects, the fallacy, I really believe this, that kids at home in their neighborhood are going to be in perfect isolation, which I just don't believe as a parent. I'm a parent of two kids. I saw how they acted. If they stayed home for a day, I saw how restless they were.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about weeks, months. Sure. I mean, I just think we have to be honest. But the fact is, we can make sure with common sense, and everyone's in this. I think there's another real challenge here, which is we got to make sure people don't think they can just sit back in a crisis and let the government fix it for them. That's not how this one works. Everyone has to participate. So anyone who's sick has to stay home, which usually means only a matter of days. If your kid's sick, you hold your kid back. But everyone has to participate, and that's what I get back to that, you know, Greatest Generation reference. I don't want people thinking it's just about, you know, looking out for number one and that's all there is to it. This, we actually have to think as a community here. And there has to be a sort of a social commitment, everyone involved in solving a problem. This is much farther, much bigger than government alone can solve. And obviously, I understand everyone has to look out for themselves in a natural way, look out for their families. I do that too. Everyone
right.
should. But there's got to be a sense here that actually you can also participate in the bigger solution and protecting each other and looking out for people in your life who might need help. We got to get to it. I think New Yorkers do that. I think New Yorkers did that after 9/11 in an amazing fashion for the whole world to see after Sandy. We got to think big here.
Listener on Twitter writes, I'm a stagehand out of work for a month or more. Is the mayor willing to work with the government to freeze rents and utilities? Our theater community lives paycheck to paycheck.
Yes, they do. And I know I've worked very closely with the stagehands union, and their work is, you know, something that we all think of as sort of symbolic of our city, and I can imagine how tough it's going to be for them now. So yeah, look, we're trying to figure out every way that we can, for example, stop evictions from happening, freeze that situation. If there's anything else that we can freeze up or suspend in the way that people have to pay, if there's anything we can get our hands on that we can do like that, we're going to. That's ongoing work. So absolutely. I think it's a combination of the city can provide support of some kinds for small business, for everyday people. Anyone threatened with eviction should be calling 311, and we can provide, in many cases, a free lawyer to stop it. If folks, particularly if they're lower income, are unable to pay the rent, there are times when we can get them some immediate financing, some immediate money to help pay the rent immediately to keep them in their apartment. But for the larger society, we're going to work with the real estate world, the landlords, everyone, to try and get everyone to be truly socially conscious and not greedy, and really cut people slack in the middle of this crisis. We're going to try and do that on many, many levels.
Alina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Alina.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you guys for your leadership and intelligence. So my boyfriend was asked to be quarantined because he worked in a WeWork with the financial advisor of like Patient Zero and New Rochelle. And we were asked to quarantine ourselves. Nobody ever contacted us. I, after that, got symptoms. They got worse. I called my doctor. My doctor wasn't sure, but he had no test, so he put me to a hotline with Weill Cornell. They basically told me that they're asking people to just stay home if they have symptoms that are not critical, and the only way to get a test was to be critical. So I've been extremely diligent, and my boyfriend's been extremely diligent, but I have two children who can't come home. I have an elderly mother that I can't see who's now showing symptoms, so I called her doctor and was on the hold for an hour. Not sure what to do, short of trying to take her to the ER. But there are a lot of problems with going to the ER. You don't want to infect yourself if you're not sick. You don't want to get others sick. We don't have enough masks. We don't have enough gloves to be able to do that in a safe way. And then it's really unclear, even if you're guessing whether you have it or not, it's unclear what the time frame is. I know Brian had someone on yesterday who said about 2 weeks from showing symptoms. But anyway, this is sort of what I'm going through on the ground, and it doesn't seem like there's a particular test center or place we can go to just kind of get tested. And I'm worried that people are, you know, I was very careful, but I have other friends who are coughing, and because they're not getting tested, they're just assuming they don't have it. So that's my experience. Sorry to be long-winded.
Oh, and it's so complicated, Alina. I feel for you so much. Mr. Mayor, how can you help her?
I feel for you too, Alina, and I'm shocked actually that, you know, the Westchester case, that's the one true cluster, like that's been the epicenter. There's nothing else like it. And if you're saying that your boyfriend was directly related to that case, and no one gave you guidance on what to do, something's very wrong there, because there's been I've seen in many, many cases a lot of follow up and taking very seriously that folks need to be given guidance and support. So I wanted to say, I don't know how on earth that happened. I think it's absolutely unacceptable that you were left in that situation. I'm very, very sorry that happened to you. First of all, give your information to WNYC, and we will absolutely have someone in authority follow up with you today who can really make sure that all the right follow-ups happen for you, for your boyfriend, for your mom, right away today, because this is unbelievable that you were left in that situation. I wanted to speak to the bigger picture, because I think everyone will listen to that and needs to hear what's supposed to happen and what we're trying to make happen for everyone. First of all, anytime you have a private doctor or whatever healthcare facility you turn to regularly, that is, of course, the first place to turn. But if, as Alina is saying, you're not getting satisfaction from that, you can't get through or you're not getting good answers, you should call 311. And they can connect you to our health and hospital system, meaning our public hospitals and clinics, connect you to someone who can either give you guidance over the phone or tell you where we need you to go to come in and see a doctor directly. The goal here, Alina, is for folks who don't have an immediate direct connection like you have to someone who tested positive. What we want for the vast majority of New Yorkers is if you start to feel sick with kind of classic cold and flu-like symptoms, get home, stay home, and if after a day or two, if it's getting better, that's great. If it's not getting better, it's getting worse, it's really important to alert your healthcare provider, or if you can't reach one, again, through 311, alert our health and hospitals team. There is a standard test that has been around for quite a while, well before this outbreak. It's called BioFire is the name it goes by, and it is a test that immediately identifies if someone has one of 26 more typical diseases, especially we see around this season. If you go and get that test, if you were sick and it persists, you go in, you get that test, and it's one of those 26 things, then it's not coronavirus. That's going to be true for a whole lot of people. If you take that test and it proves that it is not coming up positive on any of those 26, then we're going to want you to be tested for coronavirus. So there is a prioritization around people who have been exposed to other folks, direct contact with someone who tested positive. We want them tested. We want folks tested who are coming back from one of the worst affected countries. We want folks tested who have symptoms and are over 50 and have pre-existing conditions. And that means cancer, diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, or a compromised immune system. And obviously, again, someone who goes through that normal pattern, gives it a few days, disease persists, whatever it is, goes and gets the test. It is not one of the 26 from BioFire. That's someone else, of course, we want tested. And today, for the first time, and Brian, this is breaking news as of this morning, after us pleading with the federal government and the FDA for many, many weeks to authorize more testing, they finally this morning, for one of the major testing companies, authorized automated testing, which means that we are on the pathway now as a city to be able to get thousands of tests done in a day and get the results back the same day. That's going to ramp up now. But it's the first time we're finally going to be able to have the testing capacity to get to a lot more people, which we've been needing for a long, long time.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for staying over your usual time this morning to take some people's in. I know you have so much to do. Go ahead.
Yeah, just one more very quick point. To anyone thinking about the parents, grandparents, if you are, everyone wants to visit with each other, that's normal. If anybody in your family is sick, make sure to not visit someone who is older and has one of those pre-existing conditions. We have to give them space. Do not put anybody who even might be sick in direct presence with them. That's actually the dangerous thing. That we have to have that kind of separation for a period of time here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. 844-745-TALK. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.